us in the studio this morning for the year that was. It's going to be a massive hour of radio. You don't want to miss it. We've got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Woo! We've got Kezia Purick, the independent member for Goyder. Good morning.
Good morning from me too, and good morning to Bush people.
And we have also got Natasha Files, the health minister. Good morning.
Good morning. You can't miss my hat, Wolfie.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know.
What about my hat? They're both pretty good.
I've got to say, I think this year that Kezia's hat wins, but Filesy did come in with some Christmas glasses as well, which she's very kindly loaned to me and Leah to share.
They were very expensive, so please don't lose them.
$2?
Dollars are expensive. Dollars. I value them. I love Christmas. Don't be the Christmas Grinch.
We won't be. We won't talk about your department. They maybe went a bit far with the Christmas decorations.
But is anyway. That the tree?
And it's not your head, Natasha.
It's not even a big tree.
I've had this hat for years. The kids know they're not allowed to wear it because the tinsel's
it's
falling
yours.
Off it.
Yeah. Well, look, there is so much to cover off on this morning, and it is the year that was, and what a year it's been. And I think when you talk about years of ups and downs, this morning really, just shows you how many ups and downs we've had. We know that the Chief Health Officer has declared Northern Beaches Council, local government in New South Wales, as a hotspot for the purposes of travel to the Northern Territory. It's effective as of, last night, I believe, or very early this morning. This follows on from an outbreak that's occurred in the Northern Beaches of Sydney and has grown to include 17 positive COVID-19 cases. So that is just a bit of a news update. We are going to talk further about COVID throughout the show, but we are counting down, the biggest stories of the year. And the ones that we've covered off very extensively on the week that was each and every week. And coming in at number six, it's a bit of a late entry. It is Dan Murphy's, and the Northern Territory News is reporting that the Northern Territory Director of Liquor Licensing will today announce its liquor licence has been approved 2 days before the official decision deadline. Now, late on Thursday night, the Northern Territory News say that they confirmed the decision through high-level sources. All that now stands between Darwin getting its long-awaited liquor superstore is the independent panel review, which was announced by Woolworths on Wednesday. Natasha Files, have we got an official update? Is it a definite goer?
So, Katie, I have been with you for the last 5 or so minutes, so until that point I hadn't received official advice. I will concentrate on the show that's at hand and not my emails, but we know that decision needs to be made by Sunday around not only this licence but those other three historical licences.
So who leaked it to the NT News then if it's not come out yet? Was it the fifth floor or the department?
Katie, I haven't been advised, as I said, either formally or informally. If it has been leaked, that's disappointing. We all know that the public service have that code of conduct that they must uphold, and it is very serious to leak that information.
I think it's pretty clear it's been leaked.
let's not jump ahead and presume to assume that there has been a leak. I mean, it might be that the NT News is just speculating and they're putting it out there to bring pressure to bear on the government. I mean, I wouldn't naturally assume that there's been a leak. It's just that they've said they've got it from high sources. Well, what does that mean?
I think it's pretty obvious what the answer's going to be, though. I mean, this drama it shouldn't be the year that was.
Series.
It should be the 4 years that was
Netflix
on this topic,
series.
Katie. I mean, you could do a whole Netflix series on this. You know, and it starts, I think in Parliament I recounted earlier about I was pretending I had a children's story and I said it was the story of the alcohol outlet that wanted to come to Darwin. And, you know, you read the story and it's like, oh, and one day a shop wanted to come to Darwin and then it starts raining and thunder and lightning and, the heavens close over and Gunner government swoops in, spends 4 years flip-flopping all over this issue, obfuscating a very standard business process and rock up into Parliament, bring in a new piece of legislation that removes natural justice, removes community consultation, hands all power to the Director of Licensing, and now we all sit and wait as that decision comes out. So,
and Leah, we never found out from the government during that debate in Parliament why they're bringing the legislation. You asked the Minister for Small Business, Paul Kirby, and I think other people may have done in the Chamber, but we never actually got a conclusive statement as to why the government was doing what they were doing with that urgent legislation, and we still haven't got an answer. So you know, I guess it's something that will have to be put at the door of Paul Kirby and also Michael Gunner. They seem to be the two that have driven.
Aren't they reducing red tape?
Well, they're meant to be reducing red tape. They just put another little colour pencil of red tape in.
Well, look, we're expecting an announcement, obviously, to be made, or we're expecting the government to be out later today to talk about this Dan Murphy's decision, I'm anticipating, but also to talk about the hotspot declaration, Filesy. But I note that that press conference later today, it looks as though it's actually going to be with Nicole Manassian. Where's the Chief Minister?
Katie, I understand that he's commenced his leave.
But we got a note saying that it's from Monday.
Katie, that would probably be a question for his office. My understanding when I was briefed last night, he was part of that briefing last night, and that he's commenced his leave from yesterday.
My understanding is, and I do need to double check this, but my understanding is that Anastasia Palaszczuk, for example, has cancelled her leave, I believe, due to what's happening with this hotspot situation.
And Katie, it's been a difficult year for everyone, and I think we all acknowledge that, but that would be questions best placed to his office.
Which is going to be difficult if he's on leave.
He's got a telephone, surely.
But it is this time of year where Michael Gunner disappears to leave other people to eat the bad-tasting sandwiches. So, you know, is today a sandwich day? I don't know, but it doesn't surprise me that he's gone.
Actually, this is becoming a habit.
It is.
That the Chief Minister leaves just before Christmas, dumped, what was that financial report?
Oh, the $35.7 billion debt announcement.
And then bails out and leaves it to his colleagues to, you know, front the media and the community about, you know, the bad news. And I think there was another example last year, the Chief Minister went on leave. I don't begrudge anyone going on leave, but, you know, come on, let's be serious. You know, don't just go and then have no contact and leave it to his colleagues, Natasha and Nicole, amply qualified.
I think it is difficult. Like, I think that people, you know, you plan your leave, you make arrangements, we've got families, and then and things happen, and you do feel incredibly guilty. Like, I know I certainly, as a minister, but even as a local member, you do feel guilty when you do have to take that time, but
I don't think anybody's suggesting that there shouldn't be leave for the Chief Minister, but the question here is, if media have been notified that that leave starts on Monday, why is he not out answering questions today?
Today's the critical day. Today is the day that we're led to believe there'll be a decision from the Director of Licensing. Yeah. And that has huge ramifications across the community, both positive and negative.
And I have just received notification, actually, from Matt Williams, who's the editor of the NT News. He has just sent me through that decision notice, which has now just come out from the Director of Liquor Licensing. So, obviously, I've not had the chance to read through that. But I can only assume, and I will need to have a quick look, that it is, obviously, approval is subject to a condition that the licensee will, for some reason, I can't actually open it properly, but it looks as though, yes, it is a goer. Filesy, has that come through to you as well?
No, I'm trying to open my phone, Katie, but of course I'll have a look at that decision and read it. I can see it across the studio on your phone.
How is this possible? I mean, Natasha, you are the Minister for Alcohol, you are the Minister for the Director of Licensing, you are the Minister for this whole area. How can they make an announcement and you not know about it?
So because we made it quite clear with that piece of legislation around those four bills that the Director of Licensing was to make an independent decision and he would formally publish that advice, and so that's what's happened.
All right, we have also got a statement here from Endeavour Drinks, Endeavour Group, and it says, despite approval of our application, we recognise that before a store can be built, further engagement with the people of Darwin needs to occur. We understand that there are groups that have legitimate concerns around alcohol-related harm, and we are committed to engaging extensively with those Darwin-based groups that are willing to speak with us. Now, look, we are going to be catching up with the Endeavour Group after 10 o'clock, so we'll certainly have some further detail on that. But let's continue with our year that was, and I will take you to number 5, which is the downfall of Territory Alliance. And we know that Terry Mills, Robin Lamley, Jeff Collins and the Territory Alliance team promised to change the Territory, promised to be the change that the Territory needed when it comes to politics, from community-driven policy creation, listening to Territorians and claims that they'd be the change that we truly deserved. As we know, though, Territory Alliance promised to be a lot of things to a lot of people, but they didn't deliver, winning just one seat at the August 22 election. opposition, Robin Lamleys, and as we know, she's since defected to being an independent again. But I think their demise, you'd have to say, began back in the middle of the COVID crisis when they took the opportunity in Parliament to try and gain opposition status. In my opinion, the thing that really sort of, really cemented the fact that they were flip-flopping was that decision on fracking.
Well, you know, Katie, I've been around long enough, and probably Leah too, but a bit younger than me, as is everyone in this studio. But that aside, I've seen the parties come and go, these smaller parties, I'll call them that. Many moons ago, we had the NT Nationals when Ian Tuxworth defected from the CLP, and they did get a couple of people into Parliament, but they didn't last long. And then, of course, we had Braden Early and Sue Fraser-Adams with their One Territory, and, you know, they had candidates, and they polled some good votes across the territory. But, you know, it's really hard to break the I don't know if you call it a nexus, of the major parties that are historically entrenched in our country, that being the Labor Party, and in the territories the CLP, or it's the Liberal National Party. You know, so, you know, good on any group of people. Or look at even the Greens. The Greens struggle up here. Mm. They do well in Natasha's seat, and that's about it. But
she's wearing a green hat.
And green
glasses. Everybody's got a little bit of green in them, but I'm very proud to be a Labor member.
She's got her sandals on. Anyway.
No, that's what I really said to she.
She's got her nice pointies on.
International pink on Natasha Day.
No, just hippie Nightcliff Day.
Oh, we love our people in Nightcliff.
But, you know, seriously, you know, it's a hard gig, and good on those people who thought that they gave it a go.
Yep.
You know, and we live in that kind of world where anyone who wants to give it a go and put their hand up for public office can get there.
But it's easier said than done, isn't it?
That's right. But the other thing, you know, I've looked at Territory Alliance, and I've looked at other parties around the countryside that have done this, like Bob Catter's party, you know, Clive Palmer. You know, and there's a really strong narcissistic streak in those kind of people, and I think that's what we had here. So with Mr. Mills, you know, like if you've got a, you know, if you, and I believe, you know, there's a strong narcissistic streak in him, and that comes with problems when it comes to management and it comes to leadership with any group of people. And I don't think it always ends well. Usually because of the principles and the psychology around narcissistic people, it's not always a successful outcome. Just look at the history of narcissists. So that's about all I've got to say. But I don't think you'll see that party resurrect again at all.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I think, there's obviously a lot of good people who joined Territory Alliance, and I think they were sold down the river by Terry Mills and Delia Laurie. I mean, they lost their way.
James Lantry.
Yeah, you know, they didn't have an ideology. They flip-flop on very key fundamental issues, they had nothing solid to offer Territorians, and Territorians understood that very clearly.
Would you welcome those members to the CLP, Leah?
The CLP welcomes conservative people to the CLP, of which Territory Alliance was made up of all sorts. So
I'm not even sure they know what they are.
Well, that's it. That's it. But if you're conservative, come and join up. If you're something else, talk to Natasha.
Oh! I don't know how that's meant to be taken, so I'll just move straight along.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to Kalano, caring for the community from the top end to Tennant Creek.
You are listening to 360, and it is The Week That Was, but, well, we're counting down the biggest stories for 2020. And joining me in the studio is Leah Finocchiaro, Kezia Purick and Natasha Files. Now, coming in at number four, and some may argue that maybe it should be closer to the top, but I think it is the budget and the economic recovery of the Northern Territory. And I think it's safe to say that the Northern Territory's debt, deficit and economy has been on the agenda for the Territory, and indeed, well, on the week that was, for a long time, not just this year. But the true state of the Northern Territory's finances were not known until November, when it was revealed by the Chief Minister, well, in his first budget as the Treasurer, that we learned our net debt increased to $8.4 billion this financial year. It's going to blow out to $12 billion by 2023-2024. Among those big spends included $120 million in response to COVID-19. Among those savings measures included a four-year pay freeze on public servants, expected to save the government $424 million. Now, savings measures announced angered the unions who represent the Territory's public servants, but I think that everyone understood that some changes changes would need to happen. Plenty of people questioning whether they go far enough. And since then, we've had the Territory's Economic Road to Recovery outlined by the Territory Economic Reconstruction Commission. But the big question now is, will the changes be made urgently and will the Northern Territory be able to recover economically?
I've got absolutely no faith in this government to achieve that. I mean, they have spent 5 years increasing red tape, putting in barriers to investment. You know, Dan Murphy's is just a classic example of that. We've seen the Langerland review come out. We've seen the prospect of a $35.7 billion debt, and yet we haven't seen the government change its ways. And sure, they've announced some sort of pay freeze for public servants, but just the other week in estimates, we uncovered that the government had spent an extra $7 million building a car park, had wasted nearly $500,000 moving a bus stop. You know, the list just goes on and on and on with the waste. So if this government wants to get serious, it's got to seriously look at where it's wasting money and what it can do to grow our economy. I mean, approvals timeframes are king. They've got to be reduced. We've got to send a signal that we're open for business. And there's lots and lots of ways in which the government can do that. But, you know, hiding behind the Economic Reconstruction Report, which has no hard and fast KPIs, is just going to mean lots of rhetoric and spin coming out of the government over the next 4 years.
The other thing too, I mean, you know, the report that came out from the group of people headed up by Mr. Liveris.
Yep.
I mean, okay, it's good what they said, but hello, it wasn't rocket science. You know, they said what I've been trying to say for the last four yep. years, and I think Leah has too in the parliament. You're only going to get economic return and recovery and benefits when you have wealth creating industries, and that's yep. basically the resources industry, the petroleum industry, a bit of the cattle, bit of the seafood, of farming, but particularly the minerals and petroleum industry. That is where you get your wealth creation. Now, to get those projects that are on the drawing board to move forward to approval, it means that you have to tighten up the approval process. Now, one of the companies, Vista Gold, that's I've got the Mount Todd, has been waiting 3 years to get its mine management plan approved. Now, mine management plans are used for lots of activities in the mining industry, both yep. operation and exploration, and extractives for that matter. Now, you shouldn't have to wait 3 years to get something like that approved. Now, the minister is aware of it, and I know the company is making representations to her. But you know, we over the successive Labor governments, we have fallen behind when it comes to the approval process and attracting investment. I know there's lots of projects on the drawing board, and you have Drew Wagner here that talks about them. But it's still a critical time in the resource industry, in the territory as well as our country, getting finance. Now, that's the problem that the corporates of that company look after. But when yep. it comes to the operational people dealing with the government up here, they are having an enormous amount of trouble getting approvals through. And you've got to ask the question, why? Is it there's lack of technical expertise within the government? Like, I don't know if they've changed, but when we had that Bootu fatality accident last year, the year before, the government does not have one mining engineer on staff in the department, not one. And that is a critical person that you need in the government to work with industry. So is the Department of Resources not attracting the key professionals that they need? Or is there some other reason?
It's political will.
They talk about
during,
it, but they don't.
During estimates,
do
I said, Chief Minister, I asked him a question. I said, Chief Minister, for the time you've been Chief Minister, how many major projects have you delivered? And he looked to Jody, the CEO of Chief Mins, for the answer. They spent about 3 minutes all whispering to each other. And I said, I can give you the answer. The answer's zero. And then when I asked about major projects, the Chief Minister said, oh, well, there are major projects and then there are projects that are major. And I was like, what does that mean? Talking about?
I think, Katie, in terms of the territory economy, we're a very small population with a large geographical area. It costs more to deliver those services. We've got two issues. It's government agencies and their budget. And so picking up on Kezia's point there, we need to have the resources and the skills within government to support economic growth in the territory and have those measures that our community expects us to have, the appropriate regulation and environmental approvals, for example. We also need to look at the boom and bust cycle that we've had in terms of the territory. And you can pinpoint the major projects. All of us in this room know them. We don't have to say them. But we also need to look at the decline in GST revenue. And so we have done an enormous body of work around those government departments and keeping them to budget and making sure that we're getting the best for the taxpayer dollars and that they're doing the job. Their job should be there to service the community and service industry. So there is a number of things that are being structurally changed from this government.
The big thing that I'm hearing at the moment from industry, and I've not only through this show, but I've also moderated and emceed a few events over recent weeks that have included the Territory Economic Reconstruction Commission and industry. And the big thing that I'm hearing from a lot of people who work in industry is they're saying, look, it sounds like a good roadmap. It looks like a good roadmap. But how are we going to actually change the way that we're doing things when the mechanics of government and the people who are working in the government departments have not changed in any way? So we're sort of expecting the wheel to be reinvented. But aside from having this roadmap, nothing's really changed.
So there's a point of difference there, Katie. So rather than accepting the recommendations of this report, what we've done is we've gone to the heads of those departments who are, you know, intelligent, skilled people who have an understanding of their agencies and said, how do we implement this? You show us what we need to do rather than just accepting the report and then, you know, providing advice each period of time on that report. They need to show us that innovation. We need to see those changes within the department.
And if they don't?
If they don't, well, then, you know, they need to be held to be responsible because, as Kezia pointed out, like, government agencies are there to provide community services, the health, the education, but those other agencies are there to support the private sector investment so that we can then get the revenue back into our economy.
Do you feel as though they haven't been as well as what they could be? I mean, when you talk about, and I know, you know, like, people could be listening and saying, all right, well, Leah's just playing politics by saying there's no major projects which have gotten off the ground in the last sort of four or so years.
But do
you think that, I mean, do you think that they're actually going to be able to do this? Do you think that they're, you know, considering the fact they haven't been able to?
Yes, I think so. I think there's a number of factors. I think post-COVID, we all need realise how agile we need to be. There's a number of projects. Project Sea Dragon, the Sun Cable project, diversifying the economy. It's not one project because we've always put our eggs in the basket of one project as IMPEX. So we need to step away from that. But we need that agility and that sense of urgency from those government agencies.
What makes now different? Like, what, you know, because I know, based on what I hear every day from our listeners, I know that people listening right now will be going, oh, goodness, you know, Project Sea Dragon and Sun Cable, they're talking about the same things and they're a long way off. So what makes this time different?
So, Katie, the quarterly construction figures that we've just seen, we're the only jurisdiction where construction has increased. In October, the Darwin had the strongest housing market. We are seeing the confidence there, not just from us talking about it, but you're seeing it there from real investment.
There has been a lot of subsidies, though, and a lot of different... There's been a lot of initiatives put in place to actually get that moving. So,
business confidence is still very low in the Gunner government. I mean, the Chief Minister just this week rated... The lowest of all the premiers and chief ministers for small and medium business confidence. Of course, we had the Chamber of Commerce survey last year, which showed 82% of respondents thought the government performed poor or extremely poor when it comes to managing our economy. So these are fundamental issues. Of course, we've got JobKeeper, JobSeeker, major federal government stimulus. We've got the packages that the territory government have rolled out, and they're doing, you know, collectively they're doing their bit. But we need wholesale economic recovery, and that's going to take real grit and determination. That takes political leadership at the top. That takes really identifying key blockages and dealing with it. And I mean, you know, Natasha, you talked before about CEOs being accountable. Well, we've heard all of this from your government before. We heard all of this when it came to the budget. You know, the Chief Minister came out saying, oh, well, you know, they'll get the sack if they go over budget. And yet, you know, nothing has happened in that space. I mean, John Langerland himself, the chair of Power and Water, when we asked in estimates, why is Power and Water $84 million over budget and what's the consequence? He said he hadn't had a discussion with the Chief Minister about it yet. So, you know, we hear a lot of great talk from the Gunner government, but unfortunately that rubber never hits the road.
Well, look, we're going to move along because we've only got an hour in here. Unfortunately, I can't keep the three of you for 3 hours. But let's move along to number three in these stories. Well, the biggest issues for the year. And number three is the Northern Territory election. We know that on August 22nd, we saw the Northern Territory election roll around, and with it, what many saw as a three-horse race between Territory Labor, the CLP opposition, and the new but recycled Kids on the Block, Territory Alliance. Now, the government campaigned hard on COVID. Well, that's pretty much all they campaigned on, failing to release many pre-election policies. The CLP went hard on crime and the economy, two issues which we've covered extensively on this show and on the week that was. But in the end, it seemed the biggest concern to Territorians was the coronavirus. The ALP, of course, winning the majority, the CLP picking up 8 seats, Independents with 2 and Territory Alliance 1. As we know, Robin's since defected and become an independent again, leaving the Northern Territory with 2 dominant parties.
Yeah, and well...
That goes back to what I said at the beginning.
Yep.
It's hard to break in as a new fledgling party of a group of... goodness knows what kind of people from all around the place, but I think without the COVID having come to our country and our territory and everything that went with it, Labor was on a hiding to nothing. They were going to lose, and I would have put money on it. Thankfully, I didn't. But
I don't know if you're allowed to bet on the election when you're in it.
Hell yeah! the bookies had them there.
Look, we're very proud to have come from two, or just myself going into the election and come out with eight. You know that. Resonates with us that Territorians are very concerned about crime and the economy. Of course, COVID is a huge issue, and the Gunner government utilised a ridiculous scare campaign as its only platform to take on the CLP during the election. And I think, you know, some of that scare campaign is coming home to roost. Of course, last week we saw the Auditor General deliver her report, which showed breaches of the Public Information Act for the government's COVID-19 financial report, which was a piece of paper that wasn't, you know, worth the money it was cost to print the bloody paper. So, you know, it is what it is. We are now a very strong opposition. We can provide a level of force against the government that is good for democracy, and we will continue to shine a light on the areas that the government doesn't want people to see. And certainly we've seen a huge shrinking in terms of government scrutiny and openness over the last 3 months.
Just listening to Leah sounds like a sad loser. Like, Territorians had a clear choice at the election between you who said you'd open borders.
Natasha,
at
look, you're scared.
You're just sitting there, not you're saying, you know, like, Territorians had a clear choice. You're trying to come up with every reason as to why Territorians didn't vote for you. You said you'd open borders in June. You're saying it was based on coronavirus. Territorians didn't trust you. That's the black and white of it.
I actually have a different view.
Yeah.
If you look at the seats that the CLP picked up, they picked them up well. Like, there wasn't, from memory, there wasn't two that were really marginal. At the beginning of the count, it sort of was a bit tense.
Barclay was seven votes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Barclay was seven votes. Well, that's a funny area down there at Tennant Creek.
Sorry to the people at Tennant Creek.
We won that seat after 30 years. You know, it's the first time we'd won that seat in 30 years.
Hey, be careful, Kezia, because Dan Borshi is listening to the show now.
Hello,
we know
Daniel,
he's a Tennant Creek boy.
You little Tennant Creek boy in the
and
big
city. I was talking
city.
To Robbie Campbell from the Nightclub Tigers last night. He's a Tennant Creek kid.
Oh, no, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. But seriously, I think... the CLP, of course, they did well.
Yeah.
They got another six seats on top of the two that they held. And they held the two seats. Because Daly's always, you know, a bit of an unusual seat. It's a mixture. It's a hybrid, you know. It's got the Darwin River, Berry Springs sort of communities, rural. Then it's got your remote. Then it's got Timber Creek, Pine Creek. Goodness knows.
It's very big, yeah.
It's a tricky seat. So to hang on to that seat, I think was exceptionally well done. And good on Ian Sloan because, you know, he worked hard and he'll be a good member, I believe. But... I think it comes down to the COVID. And I know from feedback from people in the rural area who didn't necessarily vote CLP, but some of the ones who did, they voted for CLP as opposed to an independent, which is really where their heart is, because they were trying to get rid of the Labor government. They thought if they put their vote with the CLP would get more seats and they'd get rid of the Labor government. Now, that's that people telling me this, not necessarily the people who were voting for me. So there were probably... there were a lot of people out there who did want a shift in government, but of course it just didn't happen that
way. Well, and as it turned out, I mean, in the end, obviously, Labor won with a strong majority, but when you actually break down the number of votes, it wasn't actually a huge number of Territorians in the end, but it just goes to show you how important it is, obviously, to turn up and vote. I've got to say, I've been really fascinated by the way that COVID has had such an impact into the way in which people have voted all around the nation.
Well, Katie, the other thing too, to look at, I mean, we have the early voting, which I think a lot of people really, really like. Mm. But there was a huge turnout. I think, I don't know if it was up to 50%, but a lot of people are voting early. And there was a higher percentage of people in seats voting. It was Leah's seat, my seat, and I think one other seat. I can't remember which one.
St. Nightcliff. Yep.
No, you're about third. But we had like 90% turnout of voters.
Yeah.
Now, Leo in Spillett, and there was another seat that was exceptionally high. Nightcliff was high, you're in the 80%. But I can't remember what it was. Now, that's extraordinary. That means everyone in your electorate
turned up, pretty much going out
to vote, either earlier on the day. Well, but the other thing about this election, I thought, which didn't happen in previous elections, there's always argy-bargy, you know, like, you know, you're no good. No, you're no good. Your policies are rubbish.
There's
yours
never
are rubbish.
Any argy-bargy. It's like a week that was.
Hey, we love it.
But, you know, and that's the nature of the game, you know, and that's not necessarily unhealthy. But I found this election to be particularly nasty. There was all sorts of terrible things that went on in the rural area. I mean, it's fair game that you put moustaches and, you know, skulls down cheeks.
That's my own family.
Yeah. But, you know, we saw wholesale theft of signs, destruction, graffiti, nastiness on signs. We saw skullduggery in some of the seats. Well, there's only three seats in the rural, so I won't name them. And I've never seen it before in an election, in my time and in my mother's time. And you can speculate as to the difference at this election. You know, was it the advent of a new party that was desperate to win, or was it just because people were so uptight about crime and the economy and the COVID? I don't know. Yeah. I haven't studied enough. But it was definitely a different election.
It's certainly, it's difficult to pinpoint exactly, you know, what changed the election result or what really had the most impact. But I know someone has just messaged through and said it came down to the public service. And there has been that train of thought as well, that that a lot of public servants voted for the Labor Party because they felt it would keep their jobs safe and felt that they would be still getting that that pay rise. Now, I guess where that becomes... that's where it becomes interesting now.
And the executive contracts they tried to freeze.
Yeah, and then we've also... We saw after the budget was handed down, and I know that Filesy would be interested, would have been noting this, that, that you know, then we had the unions on the stairs of Parliament House tearing up that budget. So you just sort of wonder how things, you know, how things are going to progress, I guess, over coming months. I mean, I know that the unions certainly aren't going to change their support and go backing the CLP or anything.
You know,
but...
Katie, I think that the election this year, you know, we're sort of trivialising it and getting into some of the ins and outs and the happenings on the ground, but there is an enormous responsibility and privilege with us as a government. The territory is at a pivotal point, and I think, you know, COVID has taught us that we can lead the nation. We've led in terms of this. We are still leading. We've kept our economies open. We have got the respect of the business sector, and we have such an opportunity with those projects, and that responsibility sits with us, and the, you know, the proof will be in the pudding over the next couple of years.
Well, we're going to take a very short break. Everyone's listening this morning. Jerry Woods just texted and said we need a Christmas bell to keep the ladies apart. I feel like we're behaving ourselves this morning,
Jerry.
Jerry
dropped it off.
Jerry, where's my Christmas present?
We should have invited Jerry in.
You could have wore that crazy shirt he wears and those glasses.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to Kalano, caring for the community from the top end to Tennant Creek.
Well, it is just on 16 minutes away from 10 o'clock, and we are going to have a COVID update for you very shortly as well. We know that the situation is rapidly changing in Sydney. But we've got a few messages coming through. Of course, it is the year that was. I've got Leah Finocchiaro, Kezia Purick and Natasha Files in the studio with me. Kezia, careful whispering or you're on the microphone just about there. Now, I've got one here and it says all homeowners voted Labor, so they didn't miss out on the $6,000 homeowners grant because the CLP didn't come out and say that they would continue it after the election. Most applications weren't approved until just before the government went into caretaker mode, says that texter. I've got another one here and it says what I'd like to know is why Labor hasn't turfed out Gunner and put Natasha as leader, as she speaks well.
Good question.
She does too speak well.
She loves her chat. She's
been brung up proper.
Two teachers as parents.
All right.
Don't check that spelling, though.
Exactly. Now, let's continue into our list. And coming in at number two on the issues of the year that was, well, unfortunately, it's crime. It's a news story which seems to make the cut every year. Crime and the impacts on it on the community, from concerns in Alice Springs to a dear old pensioner being bashed in his wheelchair in the northern suburbs. It seems to be one of the biggest concerns of Territorians and an issue which doesn't seem to be able to be resolved. It comes up year and year again. Now, instead of hearing about this issue from me, let's take a listen to what our listeners had to say.
Woke Thursday morning to find that not only had our cars, sheds and boats been walked through, but they'd also entered our house and our children's bedroom, because it is such a violation and such a scary thing. You just don't know what they're capable of. The kids are anxious and very violated that, you know, they're in their bedroom. What else can I do to protect, you know, my home and my family and my children? I don't know.
They started to come in and I sort of went back a bit in my wheelchair. Then one guy hit me right smack bad in the eye and knocked me in my wheelchair, and I went flying back onto the ground. And then two guys jumped on top of me and started screaming, "Where's your car keys? Where's your car keys? And where's your money?" And I says, "I've not got any money and I don't know where my car keys are." So they punched me again. I was just on the ground bleeding and sore at the time. I was petrified. I didn't know what to do.
And it's time for this government to take a step back and think about the people of Alice Springs. Natasha, we need you. We need Michael Gunner. We need your colleagues to come down and talk to us and really be a part of the solution. I'm not hearing that. All I'm hearing is this hubris rhetoric about how good we are and what we've done, or you haven't been that good and you haven't done enough. It really has reached a crisis point and literally ready to explode.
Robin, are you worried?
Worried sick, like you wouldn't believe.
Mix 104.9's 360. Join us as we cover the big issues.
Dave Tolder and Damien Hale.
How are you?
Oh, good. Good to have you both in the studio. Gee, yeah. There's always lots to discuss.
I miss the big fella, you know.
Well, I'm not too sure what I just did then. I just...
Katie, that you'd rather Dave and Damien than us?
Let's out of my studio. Let's just do a different show.
I was kicking into the big issues early there. I do apologise. Forgot to put my stop down in. But let's go back to that very serious issue of crime. And as you heard at the end of that audio, you know, Robin Lamley, quite emotional on the week that was, one of the weeks that she was in here, talking about the situation in Alice Springs. They're just a few of the calls that we took. And I tell you what, each and every year I think to myself, gee, you get sick of talking about crime, and you really do, but you can't not talk about it, and you can't ignore something
because
that is such
happening.
A huge issue yeah. to
Katie,
Territorians.
Last night, four shops on my side of the highway, Cafe Bellissimo, the
post office
and the other two shops had their glasses smashed and, you know, smash and grab, as I call it, you know, and they're all on footy, CCTV, they're young men looking, trying to be tough and cover their heads with some kind of hoodie. But, you know, It's the blatantness. It's the blatantness of this, and I'm not saying it's rampant through the town. The police know it's a certain cluster of people, family units or whatever, young people. You know, they probably know that who the key leaders are, but it's one thing to have your intelligence, another thing to, you know, have the evidence to actually pick someone up and charge them with whatever. And we know that, you know, that there was a spike in the rural area, and it was horrendous. And it's still going on. There's been people going into properties down Sunta Roadway, which is down Humpty Doo towards Herbert, and all the roads around there. We had a spike in Beast Creek. We haven't had people chucking things in shops for a long time, but it's obviously started in because... I know I've said it before that maybe there are some people out there doing it tough and, you know, they haven't got money, so they think, oh, well, I'll just go and steal something. But, you know, that doesn't give them the right to do that at all. But apart from the, you know, it's just wanton destruction, and it's money and booze and cigarettes and perhaps some light things that they're after that they can flog to their mates. But there's no consequences, and I can't explain it any more than that, but people are genuinely, particularly women, but not exclusively, are generally afraid, particularly when they had a story the other day about a lady who lives down Strangways Road. She's got young children. She's home by herself. Hubby's a FIFO or whatever, and she's genuinely afraid. Now, it's all very well for me
and
to
she's,
give her...
And she's fair enough to feel afraid, because as we heard from Jimmy, one of our listeners who got knocked out of his wheelchair and bashed...
That's right. Well, as I said to you some time ago, there was a knife left in and tools, like screwdrivers, left in the driveway on a Beast Creek property. Now, if they're carrying a knife, that means that they have, you know, there's the potential that they'll use it.
And we're hearing more of that carrying of weapons, you know, and the severity and the violence of offending, you know, and people genuinely are afraid. The investments we're seeing in front fences and CCTV... and all of these things that people try and do is all well and good. But ultimately, if someone wants to get in, they will. And unfortunately, what we're seeing play out is that often then that also results in some form of assault. Now, enough is enough. People have had a gutful of this. The government have tried its reform agenda and it's not getting the results. They've got to take a different step. They've got to have immediate actions and immediate consequences as well as the generational change. We have been crying out for the number of years to say to the government, repeal your youth justice and bail laws that you changed, bring back breach of bail condition as an offence, have mandatory community service as an immediate consequence. And yet all we've seen is tough talk and no action. I mean, during estimates just the other week, I went through all of the measures that the government said in June that they would immediately bring in, which clearly to me now is just an election promise puff piece because barely any action at all had been taken on a couple of them and no action on a lot of them. We've got no time frames around some of these immediate consequences and tough talk. And it's not okay. Our police are out there doing an exceptional job. They're under pressure. They're under resource. They're under strain, especially due to the extra pressure of COVID on top of everything else. But people have had enough. They just want the government to take them seriously. And instead, what we have is this offender-focused government instead of a victim-focused government. And people feel left behind and ignored by their own government.
Katie, so, Katie, the police budget is nearly $500 million, which is a $100 million increase since we come to government. I'm advised that there's more 100 more police on the beat now than this time last year. There's 30 more constables in recruit. So we've certainly given police, as well as police stations, CCTV, the resources that they need. In terms of the youth space, we certainly know that that's a significant issue of concern, and that's why we've got resources and programs targeting youth and giving police those resources.
Well,
around youth
I
crime.
Tell you what, I hope there's a change for next year. I hope that we don't see things get really bad over the Christmas break either. I know the police are working incredibly hard in this space.
360's the week that was. Thanks to Kalano, caring for the community from the top end to Tennant Creek.
Well, you are listening to the year that was, and I don't think that it will come as any surprise to anybody listening that the number one issue for the year and the number one topic that we talked about throughout the year has been coronavirus. No matter how you look at it, there's no doubt the coronavirus has been the biggest news story worldwide. That's been no different here in the Territory, though we haven't had the same health impacts here in the Territory as those that have been felt around the world. We know that it's still had a huge, huge part to play from the economy, you know, to the health concerns, to those
personal relationships.
That's exactly right. And, you know, even this morning, we've obviously got the situation where that hotspot declaration has been declared for the Northern Beaches. Falsey, that situation's still emerging even now, isn't it?
Katie, who would have thought? I still remember where I was when I took the phone call from Hugh Heggie. I was in Woolworths in the fruit and veg aisle, and he was, you know, talking about this virus named after a beer from China was what we initially thought.
Yeah.
And none of us could have predicted the impact it would have. Territorians have done an amazing job. I know it's been really difficult for people, but, you know, businesses have listened to the health advice. They have made decisions that might not be great for their business, but it has kept, you know, Territorians safe. And, you know, it is heartbreaking to see these New South Wales cases. I think they've risen the clusters now at 28, including a case in New South Wales, in Queensland, sorry. We, of course, through the holiday period, will continue to have cabinet meetings, continue to listen to Hugh and his team's advice to keep Territorians safe. But I know that people had hoped we'd gone so many weeks without any community transmission Australia-wide, and people felt that they could finally get home at Christmas to some family and friends. It's easy for me. My family, my parents are here, as are Aaliyah's and Kezia's. Yep. But for those people that haven't seen, you know, family all year, it's been really difficult. I mean, our children have missed out on a year. Like, it's been wonderful in the sense they've got out and seen, you know, the territory and they've had those opportunities, but they haven't seen grandparents. They haven't been able to go on that holiday. And, you know, it looks like it's going to push into 2021. Yeah. We'll continue to work with the Commonwealth around that vaccine to give people some hope.
And people have missed funerals. People have missed weddings. I mean, I know friends of ours in WA were having their wedding. We, you know, we had flights all booked ready to go and they had to go ahead and just have a wedding with five people, you know. Yeah. And that's a really special time in your life, of course. Funerals, heartbreaking, and, you know, people making decisions around which 10 can go to a funeral. I mean, it's been crushing. And, of course, the even just the fear of it, you know, a lot of people have really been under a lot of pressure and it's caused great anxiety and anguish.
Amongst the elderly.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Sorry.
No, you're right.
I think I mentioned before on this show that even my mother was, you know, who's a young 92 and a bit year old. She was getting quite, I suppose, distressed is a word, not upset, you know. Reality is reality. But, you know, you sort of think all those people down south in the nursing homes.
Yeah,
and of course,
it's terrible.
When you're a bit older, you feel a bit more vulnerable because, you know, you're sort of in the twilight of your life, whatever. But, you know, and I've seen it. I know some of my rural people who are elderly, you know, and they do. They have this sort of, like, what is happening to our world? I mean, these are people who've gone through two world wars. Mm. They've gone through the Depression. They've gone through the Vietnam War. They've gone through goodness knows what, putting a man on the moon, you know. So they've seen far more in their life than we'll ever see.
Yeah. And even Kezia on the other end of the scale, like my kids, you know, of course they've probably heard it and I, you know, try to protect them, but what's happening with coronavirus, Mum, or what's happening with COVID? Or and you can sense that anxiety in their little voices when they do overhear it. And so, you know, it's really been a difficult year for people, and whether it's you know, right across the spectrum from the elderly to children.
Yep.
We've been relatively safe in the territory and relatively unimpacted in terms of school. Like our kids, you know, have been able to attend school. But, you know, I was at the Year 6 graduation for St Paul's Primary School, and those school captains haven't had a normal year.
That's
they
right.
haven't had the opportunity sports to lead at sports days. They've been cancelled. So,
certainly. Cancelled.
Yeah.
Well, so I think we just have to draw on each other's strength.
Absolutely.
And be positive and just keep the faith.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You know, Natasha, you've been really good. You largely played COVID with the straight bat, unlike Michael Gunner, who towards the end of the election period sort of, you know, was wielding it as a political weapon. But it's really important that those clear lines of communication come directly from government to Territorians. You know, they rely so heavily on being given the most up-to-date, accurate advice from very reliable, confident sources. And, you know, it's really important that that continues. And so, you know, good job.
Thank you, Lee, because people are, you know, the oldies came into me the other day and they're like, what's the go with a mask? Should I
they
be wearing
one?
You know, the vaccine
true.
And like,
I just
you know,
want that really clear information.
So.
They do.
And do you know what? That's actually, it's a good point to make, because for some of those people that are more senior, they're not on Facebook. So, you know, when there's announcements being made on social media, it makes it really difficult. They actually want to know exactly what's going on. And we've been really grateful, you know, for all three of you and everybody that's been part of the week that was this year, obviously coming on and communicating with Territorians very clearly each and every week. I know it can get a bit fiery in here sometimes. Weeks it's lots of fun, other weeks you think, goodness me. People say to me, what's it like in the breaks?
It's like a sport. You've got to not shake hands these days, but do the virtual high five. And
you haven't quite got all the blood splatters off the walls though. I told you.
Weeks are worse than others, right?
They are. From the sword fight.
Exactly. Well, we are going to have to wrap up. What a year it has been. Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader, thank you so much for all the time that you've put in on this show. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas, everyone. Stay safe. Enjoy time with each other. Take a break and, of course, spend time with family and friends if you can.
Absolutely. Kezia Purick. Yes.
It wouldn't be the last show unless I send my Christmas birthdays to Christmas babies.
Yes.
Notably my mother.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Mummy. She'll be 93 young.
Yep. Wow.
Brian O'Gallagher, you out there? You're a Christmas baby.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a Christmas baby. And Fiona Young. Christmas babies. And there's probably more. So if there's
wonderful.
More,
well, there'll be some being born.
That's right.
Some being born. Happy birthday and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to everyone in the rural area and elsewhere.
Kezia, thank you so much for all the time you've given up to
my
be
pleasure.
Part of the show. And Natasha Files, our health minister, always reliable, always here. Thank you so very much for your time on the week that was and throughout each and every show.
Thanks, Katie. And just before I wish people a Merry Christmas, the coronavirus.nt.gov.au website is the best source of information for people. I know people, it's travel plans now, people coming to visit. And please, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to the electorate offices, you know, whether it's Leah's office or my office, if you need information. But wishing everyone a Merry Christmas and hopefully a happier 2021.